This episode of Pat Trek is brought to you by Cards Against Humanity. They've asked us not to read an ad. Enjoy the show. We would like to thank the Chicago Podcast Co-op for bringing us that sponsor. The Chicago Podcast Co-op is a collective of excellent podcasts based right here in Chicago. Find out more at chicagopodcastcoop.com.
The late 80s. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the podcast Pat Trek. My continuing mission to introduce my friend Patrick to the best show that ever ran on television. And to boldly go where millions of white guys with glasses have gone before.
Hello, and welcome to Pat Trek. This is the show where my friend Pat O'Rourke introduces me, Patrick Winninger, to Star Trek The Next Generation, a show that I've never seen.
And I have seen a ton of times. And Patrick, thank God for this episode.
The Vengeance Factor.
Oh, I was feeling in the dumps after these last two. A little like, oh man, I've promised Patrick a big season three, and season three... You're letting me down.
Yeah, but this one was pretty good.
I enjoyed it.
I liked it. It's like, it kind of reminded me of, you know, when they watch like the 80s sci-fi movies on Mystery Science Theater?
Yes.
Not, and I'm not saying that the writing was bad or anything like that, but the aesthetics.
Oh, they were so funny, man.
Oh, yeah. It was great. And to be clear, I love the aesthetics of this episode.
Everybody looked like they were in an 80s heavy metal band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like... kind of a knockoff Mad Max sort of situation.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it was great.
Judas Priest
yes.
came to mind quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are a lot of party dudes.
Yeah. I like to call this one, this is the episode where Wesley Crusher meets a rock star.
I like the vice principal versus the burnouts. That's what I'm going to call this episode.
That's right. Well, fun fact.
Okay.
And I think this is a big milestone for us. This is the last episode that originally aired in the 80s.
Oh, no, yeah.
This one, we're into the 90s.
Oh, wow. Yeah, this was November 20th, 1989 is when this came out. And I found a headline for Patrick's log. This is from Brazil. Socialist captures spot in Brazil runoff. South America. Luis da Silva will face Fernando Collor in final presidential voting on December 27th. And it talks about Da Silva, known as Lula, will face Fernando Collor de Mello, who portrays himself as a centrist reformer in the runoff of blah, 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 blah. And it talks about how it's weird. It's like, Lula is a gruff-voiced man with a stocky build and black beard. He rose to the heights of Brazilian presidential politics, and it's remarkable not only because of his leftist ideology, but also because of his working-class background and low level of formal education. It talks about how weird it is that, oh, this guy is... going to become president, and Brazil had come out of like years and years of military dictatorship. They had not had any leftist party get to that level. Lula would lose the election. Someone got
spoiler alert.
Yeah, I know. He would lose it very close, and it was controversial because a businessman got kidnapped, and people thought it had to do with his political party, but it did not. And there was a law that said parties cannot address the media the day before the election, and that's when it happened. And so he couldn't clarify, by the way, this guy didn't have anything to do with me.
Oh, interesting.
And he ended up losing. But the reason I brought that headline is because Lula would, 15 years later, would win the presidency and would become, like, one of the most important figures in Brazilian history.
Really?
Yeah, so this is, like, the first time he was on the national and international stage.
Man, I know nothing about Brazil.
I don't know a ton about it, but I recognize that name. It's like, oh, that's Lula. That's the guy who was, like, president of Brazil now. Or not now, but, like, when I was in college.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's weird going through these headlines and finding names that I recognize today from, like, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
It's strange.
Crazy. Well, yeah, like, when we see those Donald Trump articles come up.
Yeah.
Like, you would never expect what happened.
Right.
But anyway, let's get into this episode.
Yeah. The Vengeance Factor. So when we started this up, I thought the TV was broken.
It's a new TV.
No.
If it's broken, it's still under warranty.
Well, thank God. But it turns out it wasn't. It was just a weird, like, green filter.
I really liked it. It was one of the most ambitious sets we've seen so far.
Yeah, they're getting a lot more, like, experimental.
Yes.
Which is cool. I thought it was cool.
Everything's in this green wash.
Yeah, and it's Riker, Dr. Crusher, Worf, and Data, and they beam down into this, like, weird, kind of night vision-y type planet.
It is kind of night vision-y.
Right. And it's a Federation outpost, and it's just ransacked. It's destroyed. They're looking around for something, and then Dr. Crusher finds blood on this metal shard. And she's like, hey, look at this. It's not human.
Bum, bum, bum. Credits.
So they got to find out.
Intro starts.
Right, intro. When they're still on this outpost, Data, he finds some kind of life signs, and he pries the door open. And
yeah, Worf tries
Worf
to open
tries
it,
to,
and
of course.
Can't. And then Data comes and opens it, and I felt so bad for Worf.
Why does Worf, like, dude, you know that's what Data does.
Yeah, I know, but Worf is used to being the muscle.
But that's like trying to open something when you have a crowbar in your hand and not using the crowbar.
It's true.
Yeah, so Worf is, like, going to be the big strong guy, but, you know.
Can't do it.
Yeah, obviously, just let Data do it.
I know, it's
He's
like having the jaws
strength.
Of life. And
I know.
Using them.
He opens it up. And they find two Federation scientists. And they could be dead. They may just be knocked out. We don't know. And then back on Federation sickbay, Dr. Crusher is saying it's like, well, they got hit with some stuns, like mm-hmm. phaser stuns. And we've been scanning this blood, and it's a humanoid species, but it's got like an iron-copper mixture that's only found in a group called the Akamarians. These are gatherers.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what this means. Do you have these people?
No, they haven't yet. I don't think they have. No, I don't think we've found out what gatherers are, but they tell us pretty quickly.
Right. It's
this.
Just like they're space pirates.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, they are nomads. They have no home.
Yeah. And they go around and they take what they need. Mm-hmm. And these guys were just kind of in the way.
Yep.
So
the wanderers needed, or the wanderers, the gatherers needed some supplies, so they went and they raided the place.
Yeah, but what Captain Picard points out is that this is the first time they've gone this far. Mm-hmm. They normally don't encounter the Federation at all, so they're not any kind of concern. But now the Federation has to get involved.
Yeah.
Because they ransacked an outpost, so they got to go to the Akamar system. And try
the Macklemore system.
The Macklemore system. And they gotta figure out how to stop this from happening. So they're going to talk to this woman named Marouk, who is the sovereign of Akamar, to see if she can kind of rein in the gatherers.
Mm-hmm.
And she comes up to the ship, and she's like got this kind of blue tattoo scar sort of thing on her
yeah.
face. Otherwise, she looks totally human.
She does. They all have, like, a weird crease thing going on, too, on their foreheads, right?
Yeah. I think this has something to do with, like, their clan.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong. Because everyone has, like, a different thing.
Face mark. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got to be what yeah. clan they're affiliated with.
But basically what we get out of this conversation between Picard and Marouk is that these are two different societies. What's going on Akamar and the Gatherers, they might as well be different planets.
Yep.
She's like, look, we've tried to capture some of these people, but they keep raiding. Like, they raid us, too. We don't have any control over them. We were actually hoping that you can help, you know, now that they've gotten you involved. And Picard is saying, look, we're not going to hunt these people down. That's not what we're about. But, you know, we can try to maybe bring y'all together, bridge some kind of agreement. Marouk hates this. She's like, they're parasites. They're animals. And one of the things that she brings up is that 100 years ago, that's what it was like on Akamar.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was constantly in a state of, like, clan warfare. And Akamar progressed beyond that. The Gatherers did not want to give up their old society. And this is what they're like now.
If you think about it, 100 years?
That's not that long.
That's not that long. Like, human nature... 100 years ago to now isn't that different.
Right.
So at our core as human beings, although technology has advanced by an incredible amount, we're still having the same issues as far as like society and culture are concerned.
Yeah. And Picard is saying, well, you know, I think that I can bridge this gap. We can end your problem with the Gatherers, because, you know, you're always having to deal with these raids and stuff like that. We can bring them into your society because, you know, I'm sure they don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. They want to survive and prosper and stuff. So let's try to make an agreement happen. She is skeptical, but is agreeing to it. So he's already changed her mind. You know, she was having none of this before because she saw them as like animals, basically. She comes up to the bridge and they ask if it's like, oh, so you ready to go do this? She's like, I still have to bring a couple servants. She's got this one beefy dude with the blue mark on his face. I guess that's like her bodyguard. But then she has this other woman with her.
Her cook.
Her cook,
yes.
Apparently. Riker points out to her, they're in Maruk's quarters, that, you know, we don't really need a chef here.
Riker points out, Riker undresses her with his eyes,
yeah,
and then knows a way to wow her with the replicator.
Her name is Yuta, by the way.
Yeah.
So this is the part of every Star Trek episode where they introduce the replicator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to keep reminding myself that this isn't Netflix-era TV.
Exactly.
This is someone probably just turning on the television, wondering how they get food. Mm-hmm. So he just explains what the replicator is. It's like, well, this is the part where we explain the replicator, blah, blah, blah.
It's not in every
No, but
episode,
it happens a lot.
But whenever an alien race shows up, they got to show
One of the things, though, that does happen is she's like, well, you know, I'm not just the chef. I'm also the taster. So, like, Maruk orders a cold glass of water. Riker programs the replicator to do that. And then Yuta takes a sip and then gives it to her.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to see this happen throughout the episode where, like, they have some kind of ritual around these structures of power.
Yes.
And it is going to be different for the Gatherers, but it feels like with Maruk's society, it's very structured. It's very hierarchical.
Yes.
So.
And she's not, Yuta is not really a slave.
No.
But she doesn't really have much free will or choice.
No, she doesn't have much autonomy.
Right, exactly.
She is going to have to do whatever Maruk wants,
mm-hmm.
including risking her life. You know, she tastes it to make sure it's not poison, right? So
right. She
could die. I mean, she's not going to die from the replicator, but I'm assuming there are other situations where this could happen.
Well, there's got to be a reason why this is part of their culture.
Yep. And it's because of the Clan Wars.
Yeah.
You know, this is just a thing that has held over. And it's interesting because Maruk just spent all this time telling Picard about how they've advanced beyond it. But, you know, here it is, evidence of this thing that was in their culture only 100 years ago.
Yeah.
That revolves around poisoning and death. So it's like, well, clearly y'all haven't outgrown it.
This is one of the things I love about this episode.
Yeah. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, because they feel culturally different than
right.
they did 100 years ago. But there's so many traditions and ways they act that are clearly
uh-huh.
informed by
the And
history.
We find this out just by watching the episode. They
yes.
didn't go through this huge explanation. It's showing instead of telling.
Yes.
You hear that? The price? It's pretty subtle.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm able to glean this information just from watching what happens in this scene compared with the information I was told in the last one.
Right.
And I can come to my own conclusion. It's
yes.
not beating me over the head.
Well, and it keeps it interesting.
Yep.
Because we're discovering more as the episode goes on. And as soon as you start to realize that these two different factions of the same species are actually very related, it's very satisfying to see.
Yeah, so I thought this part was cool. And then Yuta's like, well, you know, she's going to try Federation food, but she's going to want some Akamarian dishes too. Can you program this thing to do that? He was like, yeah. By the way, what's your specialty? I'd love to try it. And he's like,
leaning in too close.
Uh-huh. He's kind of weaseling his way into dinner.
Oh, yeah. She's not leaning away, though.
Well, I feel like all of her interactions with him are done through a sense of duty.
Yeah. Well, he feels that, too.
Yeah.
He's also abusing.
He's just taking advantage of it.
Yeah, he's abusing his power again, like he did with the Space Irish.
Right. So she's going to cook him some dish called Partha, which is, as we were told, a vegetable with fleshy roots. Sounds delicious.
Fleshy roots?
That's what this was the word that she used.
Ugh, it sounds gross.
It's not like, I was thinking, did she mean like a tuber, like potatoes? Like, no, she said fleshy. It's in soft and pulpy.
Yeah.
That sounds disgusting, yeah. But hey, whatever.
To each their own.
Riker's going to do whatever he has to do.
To get dinner with her.
Yeah. So they get to this planet, Gamma Chromi 2, which is, this is where the Gatherers have sent off some part of their tribe. The old away team, Riker, Worf, Data, and Geordi, they beam down, and they're trying to find some of these guys, communicate with, let them know, hey, Maruk, the Sovereign, she wants to talk to y'all. She wants to make peace.
Mm-hmm.
So let's make peace. They find all this stuff that people stole. You know, they got some metal alloys that they're not supposed to have. They got some lasers. They got a reactor that obviously came from that outpost that they just ransacked.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start to get shot at.
Yeah!
And this is the
space
part,
fight.
Yeah, I love space fights. But as I said at the beginning of this episode, I love the aesthetic of 80s sci-fi.
Yes.
80s TV sci-fi.
Hell yeah.
Because they all have like mullets,
yeah,
and leather jackets with studs and stuff.
I kept expecting one of them to break out into song at some point.
I know.
Like a high-pitched wail.
I wanna rock!
I wanna rock! Yeah.
It was
awesome.
It was great.
Yeah. And it was a pretty active fight scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, like, I think a lot of the first season, the choreography was just kind of,
yeah, it was
sloppy.
And
I mean, this is like, they're in real danger. They got to, mm-hmm, duck behind some barrels and stuff. And Data's like, oh, well, these are very low technology. Very not, they're not powerful lasers. And Riker points out, they're powerful enough to kill us. So.
Yeah. So duck.
Yeah. And this is a really cool part with Worf. Worf is just like using the phaser and trying to blast these dudes, and the other people are hiding. And Riker's like, Worf, we're here on a diplomatic mission. And he holds up his phaser and he says, the only thing they understand is this.
Yeah.
He is in his element right,
yeah,
now.
Yeah, he wants to blast away.
Yeah. But so there's this stuff in front of him called Meranium, which I don't know what that is, but it will emit a gas when heated. So they use their phasers to heat up that stuff, and it creates like a smoke screen kind of. And these guys are on, like, catwalks. That was the other cool part of it.
Yep.
They're all climbing around on catwalks and shooting with these laser beams.
It's behind the scenes, right before the big rock concert,
yeah,
is what it felt like. Someone was going to drop a sandbag on somebody's head at a certain,
yeah,
point.
So when the smoke screen goes up, they climb down to, like, get a better view. And that's when the away team gets a drop on them. And Worf says, if you wanted to ambush us, you should have bathed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So that part was pretty cool. So they have brought them to negotiations, a little unorthodox, but hey, you know, whatever works.
Right.
Picard and Maruk and all the other people from the Akamarian group, they come down to the planet, and they're around like this campfire. This is where we see like that ritual again. They have this like little bucket thing of ale or,
mm-hmm,
some kind of drink, and Yuta has to take a sip before giving it to Maruk. Maruk takes a sip, and she gives it to Tamarek, who this is the leader of the Gatherers on this planet, and he's like this kind of aging rock star dude.
Yeah, yeah,
you
totally
know, he's got a leather vest and long hair and stubble and stuff.
He's Tom Cruise in Rock of Ages.
Yeah, basically. And they offer it to him, and he's like,
how do I know you didn't just poison it now?
Yeah. Oh, and I'm sorry. I got it mixed up. Brule is,
oh,
Tom Cruise in Rock of Ages.
Ages.
Tamarek is his taster.
Ah,
he's like, Tamarek, taste this. And then he hesitates, so he pours it on his face, and they're all just like sloshing beer on each,
yeah,
other. And
yarg, a pirate's life for me.
Right. And having a great time.
It was awesome.
Yeah. And Maruk is just like, oh, you're animals. You're barbarians. And she makes some quip. She makes some crack at them as like, you haven't changed in 100 years. And they say, oh, you should know. You were there.
Yeah.
And they all laugh and have a good time.
Because she's old.
Yeah. It's like things kind of seem to be devolving. Like there's this other group over here. They're kind of anarchic and they do whatever they want. And they're just party dudes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also clear they don't have the necessities for survival. And over on this other side, we have this really structured society that wants to bring them in so they can end the chaos, but they don't understand that what these other people want, they really just want their freedom.
Right. They want to answer to no creature.
Yeah, even though they still clearly have some kind of structure because Brule is the leader. Right. He has this taster guy, so, you know, they have some kind of clan structure that remains.
Yeah.
And that's how they govern themselves. They talk calmly, like no one dies. And one of the things that Maruk says is, we're here to stop you from being miserable. And Brule says, do I look miserable to you? Yeah, it's like, I'm having a great time. Really, I'm sad.
I'm so sad.
I'm actually very sad.
I'm tired of being on the road all the time.
Can everybody please go away?
Yeah.
He's like, I want to talk to Maruk in secret.
Yeah, because I don't want...
I don't want anyone to see me cry. So, as they leave, you know, it's pointed out, he did that so he wouldn't look weak in front of his other clanmates. As they're leaving, Yuta goes to this old dude, one of the gatherers. He's like... visibly, like, very, very old. And she starts talking to him about his clan. It's really weird.
Right.
And he's like, who the hell are you? And she's like, you are the clan Lornak. And he's like, yep. What? Why are you asking me this? And she's like, do I look familiar to you? And he looks at her and he's just like, yeah, you do. That's weird. But you look like someone from 50 years ago. And then she touches his face, and she was like, I am of the clan Trelesta. I am the last of my line, but my clan will outlive yours. And then the dude dies.
Hell yeah!
Whoa!
I know. I loved it. I was like, ooh, unexpected plot twist.
Yeah. So Brule and Maruk are talking, and what they've figured out is there's a guy named Chorgon who is actually the leader of the Gatherers. So they have a leader.
Yeah, so they have some sort of structure.
They have some kind of structure. It's not like, yeah, it's not like total chaos.
Right. But it's still tribes will have once they
organize. Yeah, I'm assuming they're kind of like they still have the clan structure. Mm-hmm. Because Maruk mentioned they're like we were 100 years ago.
Right.
And it was just constant clan warfare. So it's probably, oh, so Chorgon's he's the clan leader, right? Chorgon is apparently the guy they got to talk to. He was like, look, just give us 20 days. We've got to decide this amongst ourselves. And she's like, that's too long. He's like, well, you know, we have to decide this amongst ourselves. This is the time that we have. And they kind of get it down to 10, but they got to get Chorgon face-to-face and make the offer to him, ultimately.
Right.
Brule is not the only one that they have to talk to. So things are getting more complicated. People are starting to get a little more antsy, but it still looks like progress is being made. Picard is like, all right, so anyone you want to take as, like, guards, you can come up on the ship with us. We're going to go talk to this guy. It's fine. We're going to do it. And he brings some people, and then something happens. Someone's like, hey, you got to come over and look at this. They found the body of that old dude.
Yep.
And this is a part I thought was really interesting. So the guy, Tamarik, the guy that got beer thrown in his face. He goes through like this thing about how I found his body, I am of his clan, and I was the first one to find it, therefore I get his possessions.
Yeah.
And it's just very matter of fact. No one seems to care that he's dead. Riker is like, no, we got to get a doctor. And they're like, he's old, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And they just start stripping his body.
Yeah.
Like no one seems to care.
Well, I think that that's the result of the life they live.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like, well, there's resources are so scarce.
Yes.
That now that he's gone, sweet, there's more resources available for us.
The other thing that this told me is that people in the society must die all the time.
All the time.
So it's not really that big of a deal.
That's why they have all those scars on their faces.
Maybe.
I don't know. Like that those are never explained, but their faces are really scarred up.
Yeah. You know, they found this guy. Dr. Crusher comes and she's like, first, they have to, like, swat these guys away from the body because they're just, like, getting all his armor. You know, he's got a bunch of cool shit on his head.
Yeah,
so,
probably because he's older and has been collecting it for
a long time. He probably found a whole bunch of dead bodies.
Yeah.
So Crusher is like, well, you know, he died of cardiac arrest.
Yeah, it looks like heart failure.
And he is old, but, you know, I'm reading his heart, strong muscle. He doesn't have any artery blockage. He's in good health. I have no idea why this guy just dropped dead. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
We got to run some more tests.
Yeah, it's very weird.
So it's already suspicious.
And we already know why.
Oh, yeah, we know why.
We know.
Yeah. So the Enterprise is going away from Gamma Hromi. They're going to go find this Trorgon guy. Brule comes up on the bridge, and he's strutting around in, like, leather. He looks very out of place.
Oh, yeah.
And Picard is like, oh, you know, Wesley Crusher's going to help you enter in the coordinates. He's like, a kid? Doesn't really inspire any confidence.
Yeah.
You're right, dude. It doesn't. It's a, like, 14-year-old at the bridge of a starship. But Wesley, like, one-ups him. You know, he's like, these are the coordinates. Wesley's like, well, that's going to take us into an asteroid belt.
He's like, you're scared of some rocks?
Yeah, it's like, no, yeah, there's a totally unnecessary risk. And he, like, enters in some other ones, like, this will get us around there. We'll only lose, like, 12 minutes. We'll be fine. He's like, yeah, whatever. Okay, that's fine, too.
That's right.
And he agrees to it. And we go to a 10 forward. Maruk and Picard are talking about Akamarians, and, you know, they talk about, like, these vicious clan wars that have happened for a long time. And one of the things that she says is, you know, they would have, like, blood feuds. So one wrong happened to another clan, the other clan would kill someone else, and then someone else would want to take vengeance on that. And it would just be an endless cycle of vengeance and violence.
It'd be the smallest injury could start a 100-year feud.
Right, and Picard is saying, well, that sounds much like our history.
It sounds like us now.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Picard is, like, making this observation about how this is like Earth's
very
past.
clearly tying
much
the
like,
story to us.
Yeah, much like the this is the replicator. This is the parallel. This is the moral.
Again, I wonder if they do that. That whole scene is an act to catch anybody up on what's going on who didn't see the beginning of the episode.
I think so. Because, like,
it's gotta be.
There's no new information in this part right here.
It's just reestablishing everything we've learned so far in a pretty quick way.
And then Riker, Counselor Troy come, and Yuta excuses herself, I guess, because she's going to cook for them. And then this is when Brule comes into 10 forward, and this part is awesome. He goes up, the first thing he does is he goes up to the bar and just takes someone's drink.
Yes.
And just starts drinking it. And it's, of course, one of those tropical... grapefruit things.
Mm-hmm.
I love, this is a very subtle thing that happened in the background, but if you notice, the bartender was just, like, obviously trained in some kind of diplomacy, because you could see him talking to the guy. The guy's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
He's like, just don't worry, I'll get you another one. This happens all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
And so Brule's just wandering around, you know, being an asshole, and Wesley's got this iPad thing. Brule just takes it, and he's like, oh, what's this? You got homework, nerd?
College boy.
Right. And Wesley's like, yeah, actually, I do have homework. I was trying to work on it. And
it's math homework.
Brule's
think,
like,
right?
You don't like me, do you? Wesley's like, I never said that. It's clear that he doesn't.
Right.
You know, it kind of comes out. Yes, Wesley actually does not like him, because he's like, well, you're just a thief. And he says, well, do you think I want to do that? Like, no, I want freedom, but I also, you know, want to be able to survive. And he was like, you know, I got two kids. And Wesley is clearly very shocked.
You have children?
Right. And he's like, yeah, I have two boys, and one of them is your age. He's not very good at math, though.
Yeah.
And then they kind of laugh over that. And... yeah, so it kind of becomes clear that the reason why they're able to negotiate with Brule, and maybe not other people, is because he has kids. So he wants what's better for the future.
Yes.
Instead of just immediate gratification.
They usually are looking for.
Right.
Right.
And maybe the old way of this clan warfare is probably not the best environment for a kid.
No, clearly.
Yeah, it might be fun for, like, some 20-year-old dudes, but now this guy's in his 40s, he's got children, he's got to think about the future, so that's why he's negotiating with Maruk. Then Yuta is preparing the fleshy root. Sounds delicious.
Yum, yum.
Riker and Troy are, you know, they're eating it, and they're like, oh, this is great. Troy can kind of sense what's going on. She's like, I'm going to get out of here.
Oh, yeah. Well, she can sense it with her powers.
Right
now, it's like,
she can sense it both with her powers and just, like,
common sense
and knowing what Riker is like.
Riker is having a moment of high arousal right now. I should get out of here.
Yeah, but what is that never true? Like, Yuta and Riker are talking. Yuta's talking about how, you know, my whole life I've been a servant, and I'm serving Maruk, who's the sovereign. It's a big deal, but I'm still just a servant. Yeah. I'm not really my own person. And Riker is saying, well, or Yuta says, you know, Riker, you make a good commander, but you would make a poor sovereign, because he keeps trying to get personal with her. Like, mm-hmm. don't call me commander, call me Will. And she's like, well, I'll call you Will if that's what you want. Everything that she says is mm-hmm. to please someone else. As we know, there is something more to her.
Right.
Riker does not know this.
No. He prefers to treat those around him like equals.
Right.
And he doesn't feel by having her always serving
yeah.
that equality has happened.
Well, this is where I think it's kind of weird. That would make me immediately uncomfortable.
Yes.
Riker was still, like, pursuing her when she was just, like, obviously just like a servant, had no interest in being treated like an equal. That, to me, would be like, well, that's a turnoff. Also, because that's super weird.
Yeah. Well, it puts you into this strange ethical space.
A weird power dynamic, too.
Yeah, because he is a ranking officer on a ship.
Yeah.
And she is clearly serving him. She's not making him dinner because she's sexually interested in him like he is to her. She's making him dinner because he asked for it.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Crusher interrupts all this because she calls Riker to the
Crusher doesn't have any of Deanna Troi's powers.
Right. Well, there's, as it turns out, something more important going on the ship right now.
No way!
Yeah. She tells Riker, the old guy on the planet mm-hmm. was killed by what's called a microvirus. And it's not just any virus. It was almost engineered to kill only one in a million Akamarians. So someone made this thing just to kill this dude. Obviously a murder.
Yeah. A virus would not evolve this way.
Right. So now we got a little murder mystery going on.
Well, mystery solved on our part.
Mystery solved on our part, but Riker goes back to his quarters, and then Data's telling him about, like, hey, you know, Akamar is, they want to do this medical database transfer so we can figure out what's going on with this murder, you know? And he's like, oh, yeah, whatever.
Leave me alone.
I want to watch my harp ladies. And that's when Yuta comes in.
And then he's suddenly not so sleepy.
Right, yeah. Oh, I was going to take a nap but when I had to do work, but now I got this lady in here. And she comes up and she just immediately kisses him. And he's
well,
like...
Well, she says that the Sovereign said they should spend some time together.
Right,
I think that's an important line.
Yeah, that's right. So she was like, yeah, the Sovereign was glad that you showed affection to me. And then she kisses him.
Yeah, well, he goes, is it that obvious? And she goes, yes. And then, yeah, they kiss.
But what that means is that she's here on an order.
Yes. Which Riker didn't pick up from
He didn't
the
pick up immediately?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's blatantly saying she was sent there to basically do whatever he pleases.
Right.
And she says that after they start kissing. And that's when he gets a little wigged out. He's
yeah.
Like, well,
and
wait
it,
a minute,
it,
whatever
that,
I
They
want,
go back to that old conversation.
That shit will get weird. Are you sure you're ready for this?
They go back to that old conversation. He's like, no, I wanted to treat you like an equal. And she's like, well, I'm not.
Yeah.
She's right. Like, there's a different power dynamic here, dude. Just don't pursue it, Riker. Go to the holodeck, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, no, I want you to see yourself as an equal. And she's like, well, I can't feel passion. I can't feel anything. I haven't been able to for a long time. And he's like, I don't know who did this to you, but understand that you deserve it. Which, yeah, that's fair. She's a murderer, though, Riker.
Well, she's also, and this I don't think is ever explained, but her lifespan has not been short.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It hasn't gotten to that point yet.
Yeah, I'm just saying, her saying this line, though, for a long time, part of that could be because she's so bitter from her life.
She's been living with one purpose, as we'll find out.
Yes.
But this whole conversation is interrupted yet again, because the ship is going into red alert. This is where we come to Krogan, or Chorgan's ship. You know, they've had to go through that asteroid belt. We see this kind of primitive-looking spaceship vessel.
I mean,
thing.
It's not nearly as powerful as the Enterprise.
Right. And it's just firing on the ship. And this part is kind of funny because it's just making the ship, like, rock, and no one seems to be fazed by it.
Picard's just watching it happen.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're like, yep, shield's still up. Yeah, we got hit again. Shield's still up.
Still doing fine. Yep.
We're great. So can we destroy them yet? Or
like, well, really, he's like, I want to blow up their shields without blowing up the ship.
Yeah. And Worf is saying, well, yeah, that can be done. They try to hail them to let them know, hey, we're going to be attacking your shields. Like, yeah, they're not picking up the phone, basically. I'm like, all right, well, to hell with it. Just blow up their shields. So they do. And then immediately, that's when this Donald Logue looking dude comes up.
He's Alec Baldwin from Rock of Ages.
He comes up on the view screen and he's like, hey, Brule, you traitor. Look, you got Brule on there. You're coming to kill us. And then Captain Picard is like, trust me, if I wanted to kill you, you'd be dead. Which is a good point.
Yeah, it sounds very Romulan, too.
Right.
Didn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't sound...
But, you know, it's interesting when you think about arrogance within the humans, because at sometimes they're all altruistic, and then at other times they're just like, they're braggarts, you know?
Yeah, well, I think some of this is also, it's kind of like what Worf said when he said, the only language they understand is this, holding up the phaser.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is, they're
kind
of...
that's what Picard's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Picard is trying to show kind of some kind of strength. He's not going to actually hurt anybody,
mm-hmm.
but he's just letting them know he means business.
Yeah.
And this is kind of where the negotiation goes. Like, he's like, yeah, we have Sovereign Maruk here. Brule has agreed to talk to her. We brought them to you so you could talk to them. And he refuses. He's like, well, we're going to beam aboard your ship. We can do that. So we're going to do it. He just barges into the ship.
Kicks the front door in. And
Picard calls off the red alert. They go over, and Riker's just like, you know, he does the Riker thing. Captain, I don't feel comfortable with you going alone. He's like, look, this is a diplomatic thing. It's not a military mission. I'm just negotiating a peace. We've done it thousands of times. How is this going to be any different?
What could possibly go wrong? Nothing has ever gone wrong.
Yeah. So they're like, well, you know, we got the phasers trained on the ship. I'll beam out if anything happens. It'll be fine. So they go to the Gatherer vessel. We got Maruk there, Brule, Tom Cruise from Rock of Ages, Chorgan, Alec Baldwin from Rock of Ages. And he's just like, it's so funny because it's like, it's clearly like a pirate ship, basically. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to be overly polite, but he just does it by knocking everything off the table. And he's just got like some bolts. And just like, get rid of that.
Yeah,
oh,
I know.
Please sit.
It's like just trash, too.
Maruk offers some brandy or something, which he doesn't take at this point.
No, he refuses.
Yeah, so things are still tense.
This is where this episode really comes together for me, too.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chorgan is, like, being a real dick.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. It is his ship.
He's being very aggressive.
Yeah, he's saying, like, I could take Picard hostage. I could do this. He doesn't understand why they came to him, mm-hmm. basically. He's like, what has changed?
Yeah, what are we going to get
right
by rejoining with you?
Yeah. And he's kind of mad that Maruk calls it amnesty.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, she was like, we're ready to offer you amnesty. He's like, oh, like we did something wrong.
Right.
He's like, we're just living how we've always lived for generations and generations. You're the ones that changed. Why do you need us? And it's never said outright, but Maruk wants the Gatherers to join in so they can just stop with the goddamn raiding and pillaging.
Right. Yeah.
That's what they get out of
it. It's economically beneficial to her people.
Right. She was like, look, I'll tell you what. The problem is you have freedom right now, kind of. But how long is that going to last? We can give you land. You want some land, right?
He's like,
and they all laugh. And they're like, do we look like farmers over here? Like, yeah. She's like, I don't care what you look like. You do whatever you want with the land.
Yeah, it's all yours.
But it turns out what they want, and I think this is a pretty reasonable request.
Oh, totally.
Autonomy.
Yes.
You know, to govern themselves, their own people, however they want to be governed. And she balks at that, which is kind of weird because, like, why wouldn't you want to offer that? Like, I figured that would be assumed, you know?
Yeah, it's like a state's rights kind of thing.
Or, you know, like, kind of how there's, like, republics within Russia. Like, this is where the Tatars live. Or like, in Spain, where Catalonia has, like, different rules or whatever. Like, she mentions, like, well, there's different levels of autonomy. It's like, oh, so you have that structure in place. You just weren't going to offer it
right
to them.
Well, I don't think she would mind if they became slaves. Or well, whatever that
whatever
class
kind
is.
Of servant class.
The servant class.
Right.
I mean, she kind of wants that to happen to them.
Well, I mean, just like watching how the servants and stuff act around Maruk, I'm thinking it's just like, I can kind of see why people would not want to be a part of that.
No way. Especially if you're not in the elite class.
Right.
You're signing yourself up for a life of service.
Yeah, I kind of want to hang out with the party dudes instead.
I want to hang out with Alec Baldwin and Tom Cruise.
The problem is they're always killing each other.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Well, it's they're too lawless.
Yeah, I mean, they well, their structure is based on this old clan warfare thing. It's like, well, that's still a hierarchy.
It is.
It's not really any kind of classless society. They still have them. It's just, it's not as rigid and formal as, like, what Maruk has.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it kind of sucks both ways.
It does.
But they come to an agreement later, eventually. Mm-hmm. And they're, like, yelling at each other where...
About seats at the table.
Seats on the ruling council.
Yeah.
Is what they want.
This is a great scene that's really hard to do justice recapping, because they're arguing back and forth about, like, how do you integrate these people into the current form of government without them feeling or outward being oppressed.
Right. Because what they say is, well, we want 3 seats on the ruling council. You know, I don't really know what that means. Like, we don't have context enough to know. And she's like, well, no one has 3 seats on the ruling council. And he was like, I don't care what anyone else has.
That's what I want.
Right.
Yeah.
She's like, well, you just want whatever you can take. And Picard rightfully points out, look, if Maruk, if you were in their situation, you'd be doing the same thing. And she was like, well, you got a point there.
Yeah. Well, she wants whatever she can take.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is when they both cultures seem very similar.
Right. And I think also another indication that Maruk's society has not changed as much as they believe
right.
that it has.
As much as they hoped it had.
Right.
Yeah.
They've just settled conflict through a different way now.
Yes.
But they still have conflict.
Yeah.
So.
Unlike those humans.
Right. yeah, unlike the utopia of the Federation. So, yes. Yeah, I thought it was a great scene. It's hard to recap it. Just go back and watch it.
Yeah.
Back in the Enterprise, they're trying to figure out what was going on with that old guy that got murdered.
They're looking for a missing link.
They find a birth record, and, you know, it's like, oh, he was pretty old, but we found this incident 53 years ago. Someone else died of the same thing. There's a guy named Penthor Mull. He's a gatherer of the Lornok clan. And they go through this data, takes them through this history. Is like, as the Lornok clan raided this Arcanian outpost, it destroyed this entire
an entire clan, yeah.
The Trelestas.
Mm-hmm.
None of them were left, and they found like this picture of Penthor Mull getting arrested. And immediately, Riker is like, "I think I found our culprit."
Data,
enhance.
Yeah,
enhance. They do the Blade Runner enhance thing.
Yes,
and they're able to see Mornok's servant right there in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't make sense because Yuta is young now.
And they don't really explain.
They don't explain explicitly, but like they're able to zero in on her face, and he's like, she hasn't aged a day.
Mm-hmm.
But this is 53 years ago.
Yeah.
So I was thinking like, oh, did she get in some kind of like freezer or something like that? Because we've seen that happen before. But Dr. Crusher is saying, you know, the microvirus can be transmitted a lot of different ways. It's harmless to the carrier, so you can put it on your hand or something. If it's not tailored to you, you'll be fine. Whoever you touch that, you know, the virus is designed to destroy, they're dead. So we're dealing with a very dangerous assassin here. Data is trying to find any kind of record of this massacre, of this Penthor Mull guy. There's no information on the Trelestas because they're not able to access clan records for some reason. They're, like, restricted.
I just don't think it's available.
Yeah.
No one entered that into Wikipedia yet.
Right. But they are able to find their picture of Yuta.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how they're able to put 2 and 2 together. All right. So back on the ship, you know, they're going through that that negotiation about the power council or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And
power council.
I forget what it's called. The ruling council.
Yeah.
That's it. But it has to do with power.
We should call them all power councils.
Yeah,
any
really,
form of
it,
government.
Yeah, we should not lie about what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
You're president. No, you're the power guy. You're the guy that has the power. You know, for better or worse, that's what the situation
you're
is.
You're in Congress. You're a bunch of guys with a little power. A little
right.
bit of power.
Little power people.
Little power people, big power people.
Yeah. So Yuta is acting as a servant on here. She's going towards Shorgon, and this is when Riker immediately beams aboard, and he's like, just zaps someone.
Yeah, just stuns someone right behind Picard. I think it's to keep Picard protected. Oh, that's really hard to say.
Shorgon is like, why did you do that? And Picard is like, I'm sure my first officer has a very good reason.
Yeah.
And
then he goes, do you have a very good reason?
Riker is saying, everyone just hold still. Trust me. And he explains like what the situation is.
Yeah.
Yuta is about to cry. She's like, look, you don't understand what it's like. And Riker's like, I can't understand what it's like. I know, but you can't kill this guy. And Shorgon is like, what? Wait, what's going on?
This person I wasn't paying any attention to is going to kill me?
Right, and Riker said, look, trust me, Shorgon, just stay very, very still. Your life is in danger. It turns out Shorgon is from the Lornach clan. So
Last one on her list.
Yeah, Yuta is a Trelesta, the last remaining one. Her people took her and made her cells freeze or something.
See, this was so confusing.
They stopped her aging process.
Right.
Because she was one of the five survivors of that last raid. They took her, and they were like, all right, you got to kill all these people. Here's your list of people you got to kill. They're all Lornachs. Do it. And that's her only purpose in life.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that she's been bred to do. Literally bred. Because her body was changed into a weapon, basically.
Yep.
And she's not going to do anything else. She's like, Shorgon is my last one.
I have to do
this. This is my only purpose.
As soon as I get this done, you can do whatever you want to me.
Right. And Shorgon is like, look, they're going to kill you after this. And she says, I don't care as long as you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
So she keeps going towards him. You know, she's going to touch him and put the virus on him. And Riker keeps stunning her and stunning her. And she keeps going towards him. And he says, look, I'm begging you, do not do this. He sets his phaser to kill. She lunges towards him again, and he wrecks her.
Blasts her! She disintegrates!
She disintegrates in front of everyone.
It was
cold-blooded.
Holy cow! And Riker's just standing there, phaser extended. It's crazy, man.
It's
I could not believe it.
Yep. Maruk is just like, what the hell happened?
Everybody is like, what the hell happened?
It comes out of nowhere for a lot of these people. But, you know, she explained in front of everyone, she's an assassin.
She's going to kill him.
She's going to kill him.
Yep.
And they told her not to do it.
Yep.
And she did it.
So I guess Riker had no choice.
He didn't really have much of a choice because, so say Yuta kills Shorgon. He's dead at the hands of Maruk's servant. So, you know, this treaty between the Gatherers and...
Yeah, it's gone.
Yeah, it's gone.
It's out the window.
He's just trying to prevent someone from dying. He's telling the killer not to do it. They do it. I don't really know if he had a choice.
Yeah.
You know,
he's morally in the right as much as you can be when you
Right,
kill
and
somebody.
he was trying to prevent, you know, future war from breaking out, basically.
Yeah.
That's nuts. And
he effectively saved a life.
Right. So Riker is just like right after it happened too. I loved this part. Riker is kind of in shock. You know, he's hiding it well, but he holsters his weapon. He's just like, ugh. Shorgon gets up. He's just this slob,
someone who's used to
this
death.
Unbathed drunk, and he's like, I'm in your debt.
Yeah.
Riker clearly does not care.
And he's got brandy in his hand, I'm in your debt.
Riker's just like, whatever. I don't want to deal with you.
Yeah.
Like, we can tell who he rather personally would have died.
Oh, totally. But he couldn't do it.
He couldn't do it.
Yeah.
It was his duty.
Yeah.
And if Shorgon died, more people would have died than just Yuta. And it was Yuta's actions that led us to this. So, man.
Yuta, the one that got away.
The one that got disintegrated. Riker's in 10 forward. He's at the bar drinking his sorrows, as Riker does.
Out of another tropical drink.
Yeah. Picard comes in and he's talking about like, hey, you know, we're going to go to Starbase 343. Going to get some shore leave. Thinking about adding some extra shore leave to anyone who would want it. You know, I can't think of anyone who may have just taken a life. Maybe
might need a couple days off.
Might need some vacation. And Riker's like, I'll let my crew know.
Yeah.
He couldn't take the hint.
Well, I think for Riker, He got the hint. He didn't want it.
He just didn't want it.
He'd rather work through it, I think. As
yeah, that's
to
his therapy.
To, yeah.
That can't be healthy.
Well, there's a lot of things about Riker that probably aren't that healthy.
Yeah.
But I think that's what he's going to do, you know, is just bury himself in work until he squeezes that emotional pain deep, deep, deep into his stomach and it goes away.
Oh, yeah.
That's what happens,
how that works,
that's
right?
You digest it.
It eventually goes away?
Yeah.
Please tell me it goes away.
Please.
But yeah, that's that episode.
Well, Patrick, this is the part of the podcast where we like to rate what we just saw. If we thought it was amazing, must watch Star Trek, it is set to kill. If it's pretty good, comes up in the queue, give it a watch, that's set to stun. And if it's horrible, avoid at all costs. It's not worth wasting your precious time on this earth watching. We leave it in the holster. So, Patrick, what'd you think?
Yuta, you don't have to do this.
Pew, 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 pew.
Did you set it to kill?
Oh, what have I done? Yeah, it's set to kill.
Boo, 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 boo.
It was good.
Boo!
It is a refreshing return to what I have come to expect from the show, which is like good, solid sci-fi that has like some not too heavy-handed social commentary. And like I was saying earlier, there's a lot of showing instead of telling.
Yeah.
Plus, I love the goofy 80s sci-fi aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. And I was glad to see that make an appearance. Yeah, Vice Principal versus the Party Dudes. It's a great episode.
Oh, I'm so happy you said that. Yeah, it's set to kill for me. For all the same reasons. I like the weight of this episode. There were a lot of really heavy, tense moments, great acting, great performances. Even Riker, you know, despite being Riker, he had some really great moments as well. When he's shooting Utica, for example, that is so, I don't know, it felt heavy, felt real. Loved it, especially after the last couple of episodes that I've gotten into this territory. This felt so good, so Star Trek. So, yes, set to kill.
Hell yeah.
Anything you want to talk about before we get out of here?
No, just thank you all for listening. Please leave us reviews. We're trying to get up there in iTunes. So.
Come on.
Yeah.
Let us climb those ranks. If you give us a review, we will read it on the show and argue about it. And fester in that argument for at least a week.
I'm not festering. I don't know what you're talking about, man.
I'm not.
I feel great.
I'm over it now. It's been more than a
sure.
week.
Sure. Tell me. You've told me in the last three episodes how you're over it.
I'm so over it.
I don't think I believe you.
Well, you know what I've done with the pain is I've continued podcasting with you.
Oh, yeah?
So I buried my head in the work, and then I've taken the pain and I've put it into my stomach where
right.
it will eventually disappear.
You poop it out.
I poop
at some
it out.
Point.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my IBS is from my pain of doing this show. Oh, that's not true. I love doing this show with you, Patrick. Anyway, follow me on Twitter at Pat Likes a Tweet because Facebook is for noobs. And listen to the Dungeon Rats. It's an interactive Dungeons and Dragons adventure where you get to submit the encounters, plot twists, magical items. And you can submit your encounter at thedungeonrats.com.
Let's see what's out there.
Peaches. Hot sauce. 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 Peaches. Hot sauce.
Get your peaches.